that might just be self-involved drivel, which it still might be.
Yeah.
But I did get a little bit more feedback, so that's, I'm still going to try and get that out there.
All right. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. Why are you laughing?
I don't know. That's a horrible start. I'm going to start over. I'm going to be real serious.
Hi, Sonny.
Hi, Jeff.
Why are you so somber now?
Oh, all right. I'll try to be normal.
How are you?
I don't know. I don't know if I want to talk about this on the air. I have a boil.
Why?
I don't know why. Nobody really knows why people get them, but they're awful.
Where is it located, though?
It's like on my upper thigh.
How big?
Like a golf ball.
Oh, gosh, it's big.
It hurts.
Can you lance it?
No, they specifically say don't. Because then it can spread, so you just have to wait for it to go away.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to talk about this on the air.
Let me just quickly show you.
No, I do not want to. That's a shame. It's painful, though.
It hurts. Yeah, I'm sitting on it right now, and I'm hurting.
Oh, it's not on your thigh? It's like your lower thigh?
What do you call this?
It's literally a golf ball size?
I don't know. Maybe a little bit less than a golf ball. It hurts.
I hope that. And you've never had a proclivity for these before?
No. You know, I actually forgot my friend. I was complaining to my friend about it, and then he reminded me that I had one 2 years ago.
Because
Jacob? I complained. Yeah, my only friend. Yes.
That's so. Don't say that. I'm your friend. That's two friends.
Well, but I'm talking to you. So my other friend.
I mean, don't say that. You have a lot of friends.
Thanks. My kid has more friends.
Well, everyone as a younger person has more friends, except me. I have a lot of friends, but everyone else other than me.
So we should probably talk about Patty
Yumi Cattrall. Yeah.
Well, I wasn't there, so I don't have a lot to say, but
so I picked her up and then we came here and then she had gone to the Starbucks beforehand and we on the way talked about the Milwaukee Bucks and Vin Bakers, who was the former power forward for the Milwaukee Bucks, some of his problems with alcohol, as well as his heroic deeds as a National Basketball Association player. And then so I know Patty a little bit because she critiqued a book that I wrote and gave me a lot of encouragement. And I know, so her novel, Sorry to Disrupt the Peace, what is it now? I read it in 2018. And so I'm not really on social media that much, but she critiques people's stuff from time to time. So I knew her through the book and then I reached out to her because of the critiquing thing. And yeah, I'd never met her before, but we talked about Fiona Apple. We jawed a little bit about, you know, growing up in, well, she kind of moved around, but growing up in Milwaukee. And then I didn't ask her a whole lot, but I wanted to ask her about because her short stories are really interesting. They're great. She writes them in one, I think, mostly, she writes them in one sitting. So she like sits down and they're really like kind of these taut, they're almost like prose poemy things, which is kind of why I can be more interested. But yeah, we jawed about Bill Callahan. We jawed a little bit about Stephen Malkmus, all the hits, the suburb hits.
Yeah. And maybe we should say, so her book was published by McSweeney's and it won the Whiting Award last year.
She won a Whiting Award last year and published by McSweeney's in 2017. She lives in Florida now, but is moving, I believe, back to New York. So, and she read a little bit at the end of an essay that was a good essay. It involves some cats. We're talking cats, you know. All the good essays involve cats directly or indirectly.
We can put, if people don't know where to find cats on the internet, we can put some links too.
Oh, are they on the internet?
They have been for a while now. I just found
felines?
Out.
Felines?
All sorts of cats. Yeah, they're all over.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I never binged that.
Yeah, they're funny.
Okay. Patty Yumi Cattrall.
Welcome to the steer.
Is that good?
That's good. Intro? That's really kind of like
a good intonation.
Well, I don't mean on the air, but I just mean in general because, well, whatever.
You have such a radio voice.
Is that true?
Yeah.
You
do.
It
makes so much sense now.
Are you being, so?
Yeah.
What is, No, that's very kind of you to say. Thank you. I work in writing centers a lot. Mm-hmm. And then there was this very nice man who wanted me to do like the voiceover work for like his cousin's like pot pie company or something.
Wow.
But I don't, so somebody said, my friend Sonny said before, who co-produces this show too, that I have a radio voice.
You do. Yeah, you absolutely, I agree wholeheartedly.
But I hate my voice.
Oh, no, it sounds so great. I just think it sounds like you have a radio voice.
I'll take the compliment. Yeah. I have a problem.
It's great.
I talked with my therapist about accepting compliments. So, mm-hmm. Yes, I...
It's a compliment.
Okay, well,
Patty, it makes a lot of sense.
Well, thank you for being here.
Yeah.
How's your life?
Good. It's fine.
Okay.
It's okay.
So, I guess just to start, we need to talk about the NBA.
Sure.
So who's on your fantasy team?
Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
Okay. I had like the third or fourth pick.
Okay.
So I picked Kevin Durant and, oh, now my mind is drawing a blank, like Eric Gordon.
Okay.
Reggie Jackson, D'Angelo Russell, oh, Rudy Gobert.
Oh.
Derek Favors. You know, beyond Kevin Durant, I wouldn't say I have like any like superstars. You know, they're just all kind of like decently, they're all kind of capable of like putting up big numbers. But beyond Durant, I don't like have, you know, like all-stars, you know, like Rudy Gobert is not an all-star this year. I mean, he could have been.
Right, but he's not a 12th man either.
No.
Now, do you wheel and deal? I guess I'll be honest. I've never done fantasy. Mm-hmm. I have one friend who does like three different fantasies.
Mm-hmm.
Baseball, basketball. It's kind of a huge part of his life.
Wow.
But he's constantly, like, do you wheel and deal, I guess
no.
is what I'm trying to say.
How
does fantasy work?
There's a draft. There are 12 teams in the league that I'm in. And, it's based on the stats that they put up each night. You start, I think, 8 players a night. So
you start 8 players a night?
Yeah, because there's, like, 8 positions, including, like, 4 utility positions. So it's really easy to figure it out.
Right.
And then it just comes down to luck, I think. And also like watching the waiver wire, you know, to see like who's been dropped. You can drop players
right.
and add them. So it's like kind of like watching who is on a streak, who is like not getting any playing time, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
So how long have you been doing it?
This is my 3rd season.
This is your 3rd season,
mm-hmm.
And then is it always? Do you ever get burnt out?
No.
Are you constantly checking it though on your phone and stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, really? So you're in it.
This year, I've been checking it a lot.
Who are the people you play with? Or like,
oh, I don't know them. I mean, I know Shane Jones. He's a writer.
Okay.
He's the one that invited me. Nat Baldwin is in my league, and Blake Butler, and those are the people I'm familiar with.
But it's a national, so there's only 12 people, though, who you're going against.
Yeah.
Okay, but mm-hmm. other fantasy leagues have a bunch.
Do they?
I don't know.
I think you're in your own league, you know?
Okay.
Yeah, like people have their own leagues, but maybe the numbers that you put up could be compared against, like, other teams and other leagues. I don't know.
Right. But you grew up in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
you,
right.
Okay. How was, well, I mean, I guess. How
my family moved around a lot. Like, we were in Pittsburgh and Chicago and Milwaukee and always, like, in a suburban atmosphere.
Pittsburgh, Milwaukee, but I consider Chicago not, but you were in the suburbs of Chicago.
Yeah, that's very different than Chicago.
How long in each place? And, like, I mean, Pittsburgh is where you started?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we were there until I was in 2nd grade.
So pretty young.
Yeah, and then, so I'm sorry, the suburbs of Chicago until I was in 2nd grade, and then my family moved to Pittsburgh, and we were there until 8th grade.
Okay.
So then I did high school in Milwaukee.
And then where are people now?
Oh, my family is still, my parents are still in Milwaukee.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so you put,
We're going to talk about music, but can you tell I grew up in the suburbs, laugh out loud, based on, I mean,
yeah.
Do you think your musical taste is defined by the suburbs?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
I would say so. It's based on the idea of what a suburban, like, teenager would think is cool, you mm-hmm. know? So it's like the alternative radio station, you know, it's like Fiona Apple and I don't know who else I...
Well, yeah, we'll listen. You
know, like, yeah.
But I mean, do you think that, like, so I'm from Reno, Nevada, mm-hmm. which I like being from there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because Reno gets a bad rap. And I mean, Reno's a, it's not like a crappy casino town. Have you ever been there?
I've driven through it, I think.
Yeah. I mean, like a river runs through town. It's a high desert. It's not like Vegas.
It's cool.
I mean, I yeah, think it's cool, but like Reno 911.
Right.
I don't like it. I don't like that program. And for years, it kind of defined Reno for some people.
It's making fun of Reno.
It's totally making yeah. fun of Reno. And it was filmed in a sound station in L.A.
Oh.
It wasn't even filmed in Reno. I don't know. I mean, I have a Nevada tattoo. I'm one of those people. But it was totally suburbs. And I guess when you wrote that, I mean, it just made me kind of think about my own musical taste and just, I guess, my own kind of way of being and sense of being based on... I mean, how do you think things would have been different if you'd grown up in like a big city, like just introduced to more?
Yeah. Well, for example, I mean, this is not a knock on my mother's cooking, but I didn't like taste cumin until I went to college. You know, I think that says something, you know,
you didn't taste cumin okay.
yeah, until college or like anything really spicy or flavorful. Like the food was very bland and. It, you know, we ate a lot of chicken and rice and like baked potatoes.
So this is in, but I mean, is that indicative of Milwaukee or that indicative of?
I think that's just a suburban, that was like the suburban palette. Everything was kind of beige.
Right.
So, yeah.
Never. So cumin when you were in 18?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess I'm just thinking, I mean, now I just drown everything in sriracha,
right.
which is not good either. But yeah, looking back, though, I mean, are you proud of it or it's just kind of the way things were?
I would say it's just the way things were. And in my book, I write it has a suburban atmosphere. That's where it takes place. So it's something I think about, you know, the lack of diversity,
mm-hmm.
You know, like I think in high school, there were like five other Asian kids, you know, so.
How big was the high school?
1,600 people.
Oh, so big.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a Catholic school, but yeah, there was just like a real lack of diversity. And it was like that in middle school and in elementary school, so.
Well, and that must have been, at the time, challenging.
Yeah, in the 90s, in the 80s and 90s, yeah.
Was it a private school or just a really big...
It was just a really big Catholic school, but it, like, are we talking about high school?
Yeah, I mean, 16, yeah.
Yeah, it was a very large Catholic school. There were no uniforms, but there were classes, religion classes that everybody had to take. So, yeah. But there was also, like, many of the teachers had, like, a liberal bent and liberal viewpoints. So it wasn't, it wasn't a bad place. At all. And I think the books that we read were really good. So that's fine, you know.
Is that when you started getting into writing and stuff?
I guess so, yeah. Like we read Cormac McCarthy and...
Really? In high school?
Yeah.
We
read all the Pretty Horses.
Oh, still.
When I was in like 10th grade. And like Shakespeare and...
But did Shakespeare get you into things?
I
mean, we read Shakespeare in high school, but it didn't necessarily make me want to be a writer, frankly.
I thought it was interesting. I mean, I thought it was interesting the way you could talk about literature. You know, maybe it was like, I just liked the conversations, you know, and I'm trying to think of what else we read that I really
liked. We read Catch 22.
Okay.
I remember that was big for me.
Mm-hmm.
We did not read Cormac McCarthy.
Mm-hmm. I think that book... I mean, there's just a really good story, right? It's a popular story. I don't know. It was kind of, I remember there were no quotation marks for the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
That's his thing that he does. And I was like, oh, I didn't know you were allowed to do that. I thought you had to have quotation marks to like show that someone's talking. Like, I just didn't know that you didn't have to do that.
Yeah, because you're like 17.
Yeah.
we read, I remember, a lot of, maybe not a lot of, but what's that fool's? John Steinbeck.
Oh.
Of Mice and Men. Yeah.
I like The Grapes of Wrath. I think
maybe
we read
The Grapes of Wrath.
I think that's a cool book.
We read that.
I like the ending a lot.
Were you in AP things?
I was in AP European History, which I was failing at one point.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't doing the homework. But yeah, and I might have been in AP English, but I did not take any of the tests, so I didn't get any credit.
Oh, yeah, neither did I.
So I just don't know why I was even in it anyway.
I dropped out of AP English.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I was Mrs. Utter. I wasn't in a Mrs. Utter. Her class, I mean, it was not really my thing. I was in AP History, and I'm forgetting my teacher's name, but he wore a bow tie. And then it was a very competitive class. Actually, do you know that James K. Polk is the only president to have a mullet?
No, wow, I had no idea. That's crazy.
Yeah, because me and Choli sat in the back, and all the pictures of all the presidents were on the back. And he I don't know if the entire time in office, but he did have, he ran a mullet. Other presidents came close, but he was the only one to really, his presidency was kind of whatever, but.
I would say I had a mullet when I was 5.
Well, that's young. This man was the president of the United States. I mean, all right. Well, let's listen to one, or let's listen to start of one. We'll just listen to the start of this one.
When you haunt your heart, and when enough's enough, do the fakers drop out? Promise me you will always be too awake to be famous, too wide to be safe. But all you really wanted was everything, plus everything, and the truth I'll report.
Stephen Malcolmus and Pavement.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on with them?
I think that Stephen Malcolmus is just kind of a captivating figure in music.
Right.
I think that a lot of people, I mean, I think he's a great songwriter. He's a good guitarist. But I think it also has something to do with like the way he looks too. You know, his physical appearance, you know, like he's like an attractive kind of, it looks like he's a little disheveled at times.
Right.
But, you know, I don't know. I think it has something to do with him, you know, because if like Scott Canberg makes music too, mm-hmm. but I don't think he has as much of a following.
Well, But also, he wasn't the primary songwriter in Pavement.
No,
he wrote songs.
Yeah,
but
that's right.
So when did you first get in? Or when did you first, you're in the suburbs.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, it was in like probably my senior year of high school. I think that's when Terror Twilight came out.
Okay.
It was in 1999. So, and that was like one of the more accessible albums
sure.
of Pavement's career. I just happened to hear it on the radio. It might have been on like the alternative music station. And then when I went to college, I became friends with people who were in bands, and they were like, oh, we love Pavement. So yeah. And I went to college in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Oh, okay.
And I just had a lot of friends who made music.
So, well, and Terror Twilight was their last album.
Right.
And yeah, that had major leagues on it. That had mm-hmm. that had really good songs. Spit on a Stranger. That was the opening song, right?
Right.
Did they, I mean, so, but it was also Malcolmus's kind of like appearance.
Not for me, but I mean, for some people, I just mean in general, like
right.
I think that people, he's like very, he's charismatic.
Sure. And so, it's kind of like that. There was like the slacker vibe to a certain degree.
Yeah. It's appealing. Yeah, there's a certain appeal there.
where in college did you go? Or like what college?
Oh, well, I was in St. Paul. It was it's called Hamline University.
Okay.
It's down the street from McAllister College. Yeah, it's just like a liberal arts college. It's small. It's kind of a commuter school, but there are great teachers there. And I would say that's when I first really even had like a friend group that I liked.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
So high school, though, were you immersed in music or books? Or
I mean, yeah, I was a huge Fiona Apple fan in high school. And okay. I would say that like I didn't make music. I wasn't creative, really, but I was a fan. I was just kind of a fan.
But we'll get to it. But later you didn't make music, right?
Just not very much. I don't know.
Okay. Now, I guess that, so that song though was from Malcolmus's first solo album. Mm-hmm. Did you keep kind of up with them or him,
yeah,
I guess?
Yeah. I like that album a lot. Yeah. Yeah. I still listen to his music. I like what he does.
You follow his wife on Instagram?
I do follow her. Her name is Jessica Jackson Hutchins,
okay,
and
she's yes.
friends with, she did a show in Milwaukee with, at my friend John Riepenhoff's gallery, the Green Gallery in mm-hmm. Milwaukee. So yeah, I've seen her work before through him. He kind of like showed me what she's doing, and I think that, yeah, I think her work is really cool. So
how could you describe it, I guess, her work?
It looks like, it kind of looks like ephemera, or just there's a couch that's paper mache'd. It just looks like domestic objects that are transformed into kind of like, they not garbage, but they
mm-hmm.
they look kind of like garbage.
Sure.
You know? Yeah. But there's something elegant about them and careful. You know, there's some, yeah.
Well, and she's pretty well known.
Yeah.
I mean, she's not
she's
like.
I would say she's very well known.
Has she been in the
right.
Whitney Biennials?
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's.
The couch was, I think.
Yeah. And then yeah. maybe that's why mm-hmm. I kind of remember that. You know, arguably in his field, her husband's, you know, a big deal, but she's a big deal.
I think so.
Yeah. I mean,
definitely.
Totally. Okay. So now we're going to go back in time, though. So now here is a classic track.
Once my lover, now my friend. What a cruel thing to pretend. What a cunning way to condescend. Once my lover, and now my friend. Oh, you creep up like the cloud, and you set my soul at ease. Then you let your love abound, and you bring me to my knees. Oh, it's evil, babe, the way you let your grace enrapture me. But well, you know I'd be insane to ever let that dirty game recapture me. You made me a shadow box, the baby. I wanna be ready for what you do.
Who was that?
Fiona Apple?
Fiona Apple. So what's your relationship like with Fiona Apple?
Oh, to her music, or what do you mean?
Well, I guess, yeah, to anything.
Yeah, I mean, I was a huge fan in high school, and a good friend of mine, we would go to all of her shows.
Oh,
I mean, within reason, you know, like Chicago and if she would come to Milwaukee, we would go. And then maybe if she played in Minneapolis, we would go to that one.
Oh, too. So you've seen... Oh, okay. Because mm-hmm. I think Tidal came out from Shadowboxers from Tidal in 96.
Yeah. So When the Pawn, I think that's when I started like going to her shows.
Okay.
I think when Tidal came out, I wasn't driving yet, you know?
Well, right. So. I think it came out in 96.
That's
I mean,
right.
We can check.
No, you're right. I think you're right.
And then how old were you? Did you get it then? I mean, because that was a big album.
Yeah.
Do you remember her MTV movie?
Yeah.
Or not movie, but her music awards thing?
Yeah, her speech, yeah.
When she's like, this world is...
She was awesome.
Yeah, no, I know.
She was awesome.
Now, Tidal, though, did you got that when it first came out?
Yeah.
And then immediately, I mean, she was one of your people, or how?
Yeah.
Because it was catchy, because you liked piano, because you liked her voice, because
she was moody. She seemed like a little depressed.
She was,
Her voice is beautiful. I mean, she's just an amazing, and to this day, she's an amazing artist. Mm-hmm. I think her work, if you look at from a trajectory, like she's just keeps getting better. Every album that she's done, it's just gets better and better. So yeah,
her last album was Extraordinary Machine.
It was the Idler Wheel.
The Idler.
It has a really long title. Also,
okay, and that came out in like 2011 or something, right?
Yeah.
So she has four albums.
Mm-hmm.
So, but what was she like? Because I've heard of her live before. Was she, I mean, because that was a formative time for you, too. What was she like on stage? Was she...
Oh, I thought she was really engaging. She was a great performer.
Okay.
Sometimes she seemed shy, but she was a lovely performer. And when my friend and I were in high school, we would wait outside the backstage door for her to come in. And we would give her stuffed animals. And then she would bring them on stage with her and put them on her piano. I mean, she seems like a great person to me.
But so you, that's interesting though. So you kind of, you knew where she was going to be to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's actually, I wrote this essay about Fiona Apple for Catapult, a website. And I didn't include this in the essay for whatever reason, but there was a time when I was in my mid 20s, I just, after one of her shows in Milwaukee, I had this thought. I'm like, I wonder if she's at the Hyatt, because it's downtown and it's not far from the venue. So I just went there by myself, after the show.
How old are you at this point?
In 23 or 24.
And this is after When the Pawn came out.
This is Extraordinary Machine.
Oh, so this is a little bit later.
Okay, so maybe it's 2008. Yeah.
Okay. Well, no, I mean,
whenever it came out, the mid 2000s, mid to late.
Sure, 2000s. I remember. Yeah, yeah.
It took a while. Yeah.
Well, because between When the Pawn and Extraordinary Machine, there was break,
it
right?
It was 6 years, maybe.
Was it that? Was it that little? I thought it was 10.
Really? Oh, okay.
No, I could be wrong, but I just remember.
No, you might be right, because there was record label. They had rejected something.
They rejected something. I just remember there was a free Fiona campaign. Remember?
Yeah. I think she just, I think it turned out she wanted to take her time and mm-hmm. Was changing things, at the last minute. But yeah, after that show, I went to the hotel, and before the show, a friend and I had, well, actually, now I don't know if the story is appropriate.
It's totally appropriate. This is what we want.
A couple of friends and I from work had smoked weed, not very good weed, but
weed's legal in this state.
My friend gave me a bag, and he was like, here, just have the rest of this. This isn't very good. So anyway, after her show, I was like, I wonder if she's at the Hyatt. I want to go there and give her this bag of weed.
Oh, really? Were you stoned at this point or not really?
Yeah, I don't, probably. I just don't know what I was thinking. So I ride my bike over to this hotel, and her tour bus is there. And I'm like, oh my God, there she is. And I realize, I kind of go towards the bus, and I realize she's tearfully hugging her bandmates. It's a really emotional moment because it's the last show of the tour. And I just, without thinking, I go up to her and I'm like,
you were bold though.
I don't know why I did this. Well, I'm really embarrassed. But I'm fine with self embarrassment. Anyway, so I went up to her and I'm like, hey, do you want this bag of weed? And she just kind of looked at me and was like, yeah, I'll take that. And then she like got on the bus, and that was our most recent interaction. And yeah, it was pretty embarrassing because I wanted to be like, hey, do you want this bag of weed? And also like, how are you? Like, you know, I was imagining in my head that we would like talk and right. like, hang out, you know, and that's just not what
sure.
that's just not what happened. It was like the last stop of the tour and she was just like not feeling well.
Right. But I mean, I think that's a very natural impulse too, yeah. because when people, especially if you're kind of isolated in the suburbs, mm-hmm. these people really matter to you.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think that's anyone's, if you know where they might be, I mean, you want to kind of interact with them, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think I was just a fan. And I mean, today, like thinking about it today, like I wouldn't do that, you know, because
right.
I just wouldn't. But, you know, at the time, I just wasn't, yeah, I didn't know what I was doing.
Well, but I mean, you're being really self-critical. It's not that you didn't know what you're doing.
Okay,
I mean,
okay.
I think, and I guess I wonder too, I mean, if that had happened now, I mean, with social media and what have you, I mean, I don't know if, because there are a lot of more ways to interact with kind of quote unquote celebrities now.
Yeah.
Just in, you know, more kind of digital realms.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but that can be even less healthy, I think.
Yeah.
I think go up to someone and be like, I don't know what you said, but I really like your music. Here's
yeah.
some weed actually
yeah.
is in its own way kind of really impactful potentially.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you follow her on social media?
Oh, I don't think she's really on. She's not on social media. She has fan pages, and there are some that seem to have access to her, but she doesn't like have a Twitter account or.
I thought she had an Instagram. Is she not?
No, she has a fan Instagram.
She has a fan
but
Instagram.
They post things that she sends them. But you, yeah, yeah, she doesn't have her own.
And do you still keep up with her now, kind of? I mean, if she...
Yeah, yeah. If she had an album come out later this year, I think now I would probably try to, like, interview her or something.
Right,
I would go about it that way, like, in a more professional way.
Well, I mean, again, self-critical.
I know. yeah. Yeah, I'm very interested in whatever she does, you know, music-wise. And I can't wait for her next album whenever it materializes, you know. And I just think that she's just not the type of musician that is going to, like, write an album and put it out just because that's what she should do. She, like, takes a really long time. And it
mm-hmm.
might be 10 more years. Who knows, like, when it will appear.
But, sure.
But when it does, you know, I'll be very happy and excited to listen to it.
And were you someone, or are you someone who parses lyrics? I mean, with any like artists,
no.
like hers, because
no.
"Win the Pawn," it is a poem. That is that
yeah.
whole like that title.
Yeah.
But that was never your thing.
Not really. Not really with song lyrics. I think a lot of time. I mean, not with her necessarily, but like with Stephen Malkmus. Like, I think the lyrics are just kind of there. They're just like because they exist because. You know, a musician needs to sing something, you know, they need words, but they don't mean anything really.
Right.
I think with hers, you could do that. I know there are people that do that with Joanna Newsom's lyrics, which are very literary. There are fans that dissect everything that she sings, you know, but I just have never felt the need to do that. I don't know why.
Well, I mean.
Yeah, I just haven't been someone that does that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get one more going here.
My dad and my mom went to Hawaii. There's lots of pineapples there.
So that's Casino versus Japan,
mm-hmm.
who I know nothing about.
okay.
who, I mean, that kind of reminds me of Boards of Canada.
Definitely. Yeah, I hear a lot of overlap between those two. Casino versus Japan is someone named Eric Kowalski, and he used to work at a record store in Milwaukee called Atomic Records, which no longer exists, unfortunately, of course. But yeah, he was behind the counter there. And when my friends and I were in high school, we would go there every Friday and like browse and maybe like buy like one CD or like a magazine. Mm-hmm. And Eric was always working there. And
intimidating, yeah, though, to go up to someone like that? Or you didn't
We didn't like interact with him. Okay. Like, hey, how are you? You know, it was just like there was a transaction. But then in my 20s, I think I was still going there. And we just like started talking once, and then we were like emailing a little, and yeah, we just talk about music.
And he was Sonny versus, what's the name of the band?
Oh, Casino versus Japan.
Casino versus,
yeah,
so that was, yeah, his kind of brainchild.
Yeah.
And so what, do you listen to them now? Are they still around or what?
Yeah, yeah, he still makes music. He has a lot of albums out. I think he just put one out recently. And
so they're a national thing?
It's just him, okay, by himself.
Okay.
But yeah, he still continues to put out music and it's good. And he makes it himself and produces it himself. And I think it's a very, yeah, I don't know like a lot about his music, but.
Is it always instrumental like that?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you, while you're writing, do you listen to music?
Yeah.
You,
yeah,
know?
But yeah, but not with words. Like, it's too distracting. So I'll listen to that, his music. I'll listen to Aphex Twin. Sometimes there's classical music. Sometimes I don't listen to anything.
Sure.
I think it just depends.
Okay. And then, so if you don't mind talking about it, you did play music for a little bit.
Very briefly and not very seriously. Like, it was just, oh, here's all of your friends are making music and they want to play a show with you. And so here's a 4-track recorder that like costs less than $100. And, you know, it was just, I was not very good. And I still, like, I don't know how to play guitar. I don't know how to do any of that.
But again, self-critical. I mean,
no,
it's,
no,
did you learn chords?
This is an honest assessment.
You learned chords, though.
Sure, but anyway, yeah, like A, E, D, G,
I mean,
C.
So, that's all you, I mean, that's five. I was just going to say you need three. Like, that's
true. But I never felt comfortable with it, and I just am not comfortable with performing, and eventually I just switched to writing. I was like, oh, I'd rather write. I don't want to write songs. Like, I just want to write a story or a book. Like, I don't want to play music because other people are good at it and they should do it, and I don't want to do it.
But how, so you did perform?
Oh, like once or twice, like in Minneapolis with my friends who were in a band called Best Friends Forever. Because they were really best friends.
And, that's apt, yes.
Yeah, and yeah, like maybe I played one show in like at like an anarchist bookstore, you know, but never anything
solo.
Like,
or you played,
yeah,
with,
just once. Yeah, once. Like once or twice.
Okay. And so, but guitar though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, but it's really not something, it's something I'm very embarrassed by. Okay, and like, I can't believe I'm even admitting that this is something that happened. And mm-hmm. I don't know, like, I just feel very embarrassed by it.
This was in your early 20s?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you started writing, I mean, was there lyrics too?
Yeah.
So they were kind of like poems set to music?
I suppose, yeah.
And do you have?
They were pretty simple.
Yeah. Do you have any of that anymore?
No.
So all of it, the entire, okay.
No.
The Cottrell catalog has been lost to time.
Nope. No.
Okay.
And that's okay. I'm okay with that.
But, you know, I mean, the music of your writing too. I mean, do you think about those types of things?
What do you mean?
Well, I guess kind of like rhythm. And I mean, I'm thinking of your short stories. They're very impactful in like 6 paragraphs sometimes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of staccato, I guess.
Yeah, it's pretty blunt.
Blunt, maybe?
Yeah, it's pretty blunt.
What were your songs like? Were they pretty, I mean, how would you describe?
They were childlike and simple.
Okay.
And they were very simple. There was never like a bridge or even like a chorus or anything. They were just very simple.
Well, simple, you seem like it's saying that's a bad thing, but
I think it's fine. Yeah. I think it's fine. I just feel embarrassed because it's just something I don't do anymore and I don't have any interest in doing it. And
okay.
Yeah.
Were they short though?
Yeah. Yeah. They were all under like 3 minutes. Yeah. Pretty short.
Okay. All right. Well, let's listen to one more thing, okay. And then I'd love for you to read something.
Okay.
I was not woken by the rooster. Or by the crow's tough song. But the midnight cry of a blood river brought this sleeplessness on. Threw open the window. Moonlight on the black garden of thorns, and the cool wind on my sweat. What cries home? Where cries from? The blood red bird lies in the wind.
So Bill Callahan,
mm-hmm.
And some people could say his songs are somewhat childlike. What do you like about Smog or Bill Callahan?
Oh, I just...
When'd you get into him?
I mean, he's such a great writer.
So, yeah.
And his voice, again, is incredible.
He's got a radio voice. I'm just joking.
Yes,
his voice sounds a lot like mine, my radio voice.
Yeah, he's just a joyful presence, and his albums are always consistently... you know, well written and really thoughtful, and so
I've read some lyrics of his. Mm-hmm. I mean, because he put out a book of his lyrics,
right?
Do you have that?
I don't have that.
But
I
it exists, right?
Yes,
I'm not crazy.
Drag City.
Yeah.
And he also wrote a book.
Oh, he did,
in letter form. I think it's letters to Emma Bolcutt. It's just like these letters that the narrator is writing to a woman that he met at a party, and it's really, that book is incredible. Every time I've lent that to someone, I never get it back.
Oh, really?
So that's always a good sign.
Did it come out a while ago?
Yeah, it might be out of print. I don't know. Yeah.
And then when'd you start listening to him? Is this again?
College, college, like just having cool friends who have good taste.
Yeah. I guess the last thing is, so the Art Institute of Chicago,
mm-hmm.
What was that like?
I loved it. I thought it was great. Yeah, it was a great experience.
Is that an MFA program?
It's 2 years. You can take classes in any department at the school. You don't have to take writing classes. So I had friends that took drawing classes and sculpture. So you don't have to stay in the writing department, but you do like have to produce a thesis, and you work closely with like a couple advisors, and you, mm-hmm. you meet with them like every other week, and they look at your work. And it was great.
And were you seriously writing by that point? I mean,
at that point I was like, oh, I really want to try to do this, and I want to get better, and I want to learn how to do it. And yeah, and I was reading a lot.
And Jesse Ball was one of your mentors, right? Or was one of your...
Yeah, he's there, and he was there, and he's very helpful and a very generous person. And I mean, again, like his books are always a delight when they show up in the world.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think your work's at all really like his, but you write in spurts, right?
Like, for example, like with a short story, like I will write it pretty quickly. I won't think about it for a while, and then I'll go back and look at it and kind of read it again with fresh eyes And by that point, I'll know, like, if something needs to change, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I have trouble with short stories, actually. Like, I find them really hard. I think it's really hard to write those. But yeah, even like with a book, I'll try to contain, like, at least with my first book, I tried to contain the writing just because I was also working full time. I was teaching at a school, and there was just no way I was ever going to finish it if I didn't complete it over like spring break, you know.
Which was like 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, but I had like 6 or 7 of the chapters from the book, like from like a year before. So it did take me a long time to write it, to finish it, you know, because I had started like a year earlier, you know.
But you also wrote a lot in 2 weeks.
I did, out of necessity, because I just knew that if I didn't finish it, then I would just never have the motivation to write it.
Yeah,
it would just, it would sit there and it would just get confusing and I would just never do it. I just had to do it.
But you did do it, and it was a successful do too. I
don't know if I would do it that way again. I don't know. I guess it just depends on what the life circumstances are and what's going on in my life at the time and what I'm working on. Yeah, it depends.
Right. But yeah. 2 weeks, I just think that's kind of bananas.
Well, I mean, and again, like...
You had stuff before.
Yeah, and I do... it turned out well, but I also, you know, I'm not... Sometimes I'm like, oh, I wish I had spent like a little more time on it. And of course it was revised, you know, with an editor. It was edited. But yeah, there are moments where I'm like, oh, I wish I had more time to retell that story, but... You never know. So.
Sure. Well, okay.
But I think that, like, time, the amount of time the book takes, you know, it doesn't matter. Some are written very quickly. Some take 10 years. And I don't know. I don't really understand why people get so caught up in that, like, how long something takes. Because,
oh, really?
Yeah, I guess I just have never understood, because some things take 10 years, you know, and then it comes out and it's perfect, you know? So I guess... It just depends. Like, there's no one recipe or way to do it. You know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't trying to insinuate that 2 weeks made kind of like inferior in some way.
Oh, no, I know.
I just meant that to write something, I'm a poet mostly. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, yeah, it takes me a really long time to work on something.
Yeah.
And I read it the other day that this writer can write 5,000 words in a day. And that, I guess, as a poet, sometimes someone who does for like work on a stanza or some crap for a while, like, I guess prose is something that I just find interesting to be able to do and to do well and to do in a compressed period of time, especially if you don't necessarily know, like, some people plan everything out and you're not one of those writers, right?
No, I don't. But with that book, I knew the story that I wanted to tell. So I think that made a huge difference. But I don't outline. I don't have a plan. I really am not that type of writer, and I don't want to write like that, because I just don't.
Right. Well,
I just don't want to do it.
Well, because then the mystery is kind of already.
I think so. But I do think there are plenty of people who can write that way, and that's what works for them. And, you know, but that just doesn't work for me. I think I would be so bored, and it would just be a slog, you know.
Well, because it's a formula that's already been kind of solved.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But you're right. For some people, that's how they, that's their livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You want to read something for us?
Yeah, as it just so happens.
Okay, perfect.
I did bring something, and I read this last night, and I'm going to read it again.
You wrote it last night?
No, I'm sorry. I read it last night at Mississippi Records, and I'm going to read just a few pages of it because it's a little long. So.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, so this is called Franny, and it's an essay that is going to be coming out in an anthology from Soft Skull, and the anthology is called Pets. So it's about people's pets.
Oh, really?
And and there's just, they asked writers to write about their pets. So I have a pet, and my cat's name is Franny, and this is about her. I'm just going to read a few pages.
Okay, perfect.
In mid-July, I wrote a document about my cat. I began this document with a memory of my cat when she was a kitten. In the memory, it is the summer of 2005, and my cat was lying on my stomach as I sat in a chair watching the movie Storytelling. I have nothing to say about the movie's storytelling, but I do have some things to say about my cat. I had never had my own pet before. I didn't ask for a cat. Some well-meaning stoner-type coworkers thrust her upon me. Elisa and Johanna brought this cat into the cafe. Patty, this is for you. The cat was in a cardboard box. I didn't like cats. I wanted a dog, not a cat. I took her home anyway. My cat was a tiny black ball that fit into my hand. She was vocal and made weird sounds. I left work early that day, and when I got home, I searched my bookshelves for her name. I saw a book with two names in the title. I chose one of those. A few days after she came home with me, she fell into the toilet. She was clumsy, and she simply fell into the bowl after I had urinated. I wasn't good at flushing then. I had to go to work, so I didn't do anything. I thought perhaps the urine would dry off her fur and go away. When I came home, the apartment had the foulest smell imaginable, worse than any cage at the zoo. It's August now, and I cannot find the document I began in mid-July. I've looked at the folder on my desktop titled My Cat's Name, but the document is not there. Instead, there are various medical records and examinations and blood tests and results from an ultrasound and a meeting with a feline internist and a spreadsheet of my cat's stools, what type of stool she had, whether it was soft or hard, and how many and when. My cat has not been feeling well. I've talked about my cat with many strangers and friends. One friend told me she couldn't imagine how I was coping with my cat's health issues because I have anxiety. My cat has pancreatitis and kidney disease. She might have IBD, small cell lymphoma, diabetes, hyperthyroidism. Whatever it is, I want to know. My therapist, a Buddhist-ordained priest, said that one of the themes of my life is searching for the truth. When my brother committed suicide, I wanted to know everything about it. I scoured his closet for clues, and there were medical records regarding his attempt to donate his organs. I reached out to a friend of his from grade school. I listened to people talk about him at his funeral. I wrote a book about that. When I finished it, I felt better. Then for a year or so, I was very poor. My cat became sick in January 2018. I had to borrow $100 from a friend in Pittsburgh so I could take my cat to the vet in Brooklyn. My parents suggested I give her up for adoption. You can't afford to own a goldfish, said my father. My cat was 13 years old and black. If she went to the Humane Society, she would spend the rest of her life in a cage. A week later, a series of horrible things befell us. My cat had another eye infection, then she had feline chin acne. There were spells of not eating or drinking water. This went on for some time. In March 2018, I won two cash prizes, ostensibly to be used for writing a new book. It was a miracle. When the Whiting Committee told me about the prize over the phone, I began to cry. Everyone cries when money comes out of nowhere. I got off the phone with them and began to clap my hands, wondering if the phone call was part of a dream. When dreaming, clapping your hands is impossible. I told myself I would write three books with the money over the next 2 years. That's what I envisioned. Instead, as soon as I cashed the checks, I began to take my cat to different vets to try to gather opinions about what was wrong. Her symptoms are vague, said one vet. It could be something sinister, like cancer. Another vet told me to calm down and assured me my cat was depressed because she didn't have access to an entire house, just a room and an apartment in Brooklyn. My girlfriend was worried about me. She said I was fixated. My cat used to lie in the crook of my arm on the bed. She would lie on my stomach or between my legs. I wanted her to greet me when I opened the door. Perhaps this was selfish. I would go on to spend a significant amount of the prize money, thousands of dollars, trying to find out what was wrong. Perhaps this was foolish and limited. I had been foolish before. I'd canceled events to stay home with my cat. I refused to travel anywhere. I stayed in my room with the door closed. When I left my cat with my girlfriend for a few nights because I absolutely had to, I was panicked. All I could think about was my cat. Did my girlfriend make sure to close a bedroom door so my roommate's cat wouldn't attack her? Did she fill the mason jar with water all the way up to the top so that the water was practically brimming over? She texted me a photo of my cat, and I zoomed in to look at the mason jar. You didn't fill the jar all the way to the top, I texted her. It's spilling over, she said. The photo is an optical illusion. And I'll stop there. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Patty.
Thank you.
What's your favorite color?
Oh, I like green.
Green. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Okay.
We're good.
You're listening to The Steer, recorded at KBOO Radio, broadcast on dublab.com, hosted by Jeff Alessandrelli and Sonny Bleckinger. For more, see our website at www.the-steer.com. You can download our episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, and anywhere podcasts are found.